This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, former President Donald J. Trump is indicted by the Department of Justice on charges connected to his handling of classified national security documents. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. This marks the first time in American history that an ex-president has been criminally indicted. As the VOA newsroom reports, quote, a federal grand jury in the southern U.S. state of Florida charged former President Trump on Thursday of violating federal laws that prohibit the unauthorized retention of national defense information, a crime punishable by up to 10 years in prison. The 7-count indictment has not yet been made public. Not unexpectedly, Trump denied the charges and accused the Biden administration of weaponizing the Justice Department and FBI to target him. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Republican Congressman Jim Jordan said, quote, it's a sad day for America. God bless President Trump, unquote. Trump supporters also rallied behind the former president. Others hailed the indictment, saying that no one, not even a sitting or former president, is above the law. The Justice Department had been investigating Trump since early last year, after the National Archives notified the law enforcement agency that the former president had hoarded hundreds of sensitive government documents at his Florida resort and thwarted government efforts to retrieve them. Trump later turned over several dozen documents, but was suspected of holding on to more, reports the VOA newsroom. The FBI then executed a search of his Mar-a-Lago residence, recovering more than 100 classified documents. In all, prosecutors have retrieved more than 300 documents that belong to the American people, including some marked top secret, sensitive, compartmented information, the highest level of classification. In other news, the field of Republican presidential contenders has expanded. Former Vice President Mike Pence threw his hat into the ring, as have former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Well, for more on the Trump indictment and the GOP presidential contest and more, we turn to our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and that's a conservative think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler. He is executive vice president for policy at Third Way. That's a center-left policy group here in Washington. And both veteran analysts join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Carol.
Yes, indeed, John Fortier. Before the indictment came down Thursday, I was thinking we'd start with how President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy averted the debt ceiling crisis. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, we have this Trump indictment. And therefore, I want to get you to respond to this development.
Of course, we knew about a number of investigations that were ongoing with respect to the former president, state and national. You had earlier the indictment in New York. And this, of course, is coming from a special counsel within the Justice Department, federal charges relating to the documents that he was to have turned over to the archives, some of which include classified materials that we know something about, but we don't know, all the details of the indictment. It's going forward, and we'll know more soon. Okay, I think the couple of big pictures here are that President Trump benefited, at least in the short term, from the last indictment, the one that was made in New York. I think there was a rallying around the president from many Republicans, and even Republicans who might have flirted with other candidates and were not thrilled with Donald Trump. The vast majority of Republicans see these things as attacks by political opponents, either political prosecutors, such as in New York, like elected prosecutors, or in this case, while you can make the case that it's an insulated counsel, it is still a counsel within the Justice Department of President Biden, who could very well be that these were the candidates, but Donald Trump versus President Biden. And I don't think there's any good answer to this, because, of course, one doesn't want to say that you want to let someone get away with things and people are above the law. But on the other hand, having a number of indictments and a significant number of legal proceedings against the candidate, some of whom have backing of his political opponents, is not something that's going to go well with at least one half of the American people, and I think is going to make our time messier. So I don't know that this is going to change the political calculus much more than the earlier indictment did. I think we're going to see probably more as we go forward, but it is a very thorny set of prosecutions that the Biden administration is going to have to take on. And I think it would be better had we not had to go into this very messy political situation.
Very good. And we will get into the impact on Trump's political fortunes in more questions to follow. But let me turn to you now, Jim Kessler. The former president faces at least 7 charges that include willful retention of national defense information, even conspiracy to obstruct justice, withholding documents. What is your reaction to this development?
It's not really a surprise. Look, this indictment will be unsealed probably next week. You'll see the Justice Department laying out its case. I'm sure it'll look very stark. They'll put out a case that's got a lot of facts that we don't know at this point. This is going to be a test for the mainstream wing of the Republican Party that has really wanted Trump out of here, you know, since he descended on the escalator in 2015 and announced his run for president. And Republicans who want Trump gone, and there's a lot of them, I think they'd be making a mistake by parroting the lines that this is the weaponization of government and the Justice Department, or trying to compare it in some ways to what Joe Biden did with classified documents in his home. And they need to say that this is because of Donald Trump. It's his own mess. It's his fault. You know, you're seeing some Republicans right now actively backing him and others staying silent. And silence is a signal that you support what the Justice Department is doing. But that is really too timid at this point. And if the Republican Party, at least that mainstream wing, wants to rid themselves of Trump, this is the time to do it.
So back to you, John Fortier, and I do want to pick up on Jim's statement that this is a test, in a sense, for the mainstream wing of the Republican Party. But let me just review some of Trump's legal woes briefly. This is Trump's second indictment this year. He was indicted in Manhattan, as you alluded to several weeks ago, in relation to payments to the porn star Stormy Daniels. And he faces another Justice Department investigation and one in Georgia. And both are in connection with his efforts to remain in power after losing the 2020 election. So that said, let me pick up on what Jim just said with regard to being a test mainstream wing of the Republican Party. We know his denials. We know that the likes of Republican Congressman Jim Jordan and others are going to vociferously defend former President Trump. Nonetheless, do you agree with Jim that this is a test, in fact, and that notwithstanding all these accusations that it's a political stunt by the Biden administration, that there are some real concerns by some Republicans who are, instead of saying anything, just remaining silent?
I guess I see the politics within the Republican Party differently than Jim. Look, I think that percentage of Republicans who really don't want Trump, who are never Trumpers, is a pretty small number. And what I think you have is a large number of people who, if you look at the numbers, who actually voted for Donald Trump twice and voted for him last time, who some of those people, and I'd say this is why there's an opening for people like Ron DeSantis, maybe half of those people are potentially looking to move on. They maybe see a better version of Trump. They see some character flaws. They're tired a little bit of the circus. But at the end of the day, they also see someone who they believe has been persecuted in many ways. And we can bring up each individual suit, and there may be merit. We've seen some evidence that there probably is some merit related to the documents. But certainly the early investigations into the Trump campaign, and then ultimately the early investigations into the Russia collusion theory, all of these things are, I think, are in Republicans' minds that these are charges being brought by Democrats, and there is a rally around effect. Now, will that rally around effect last forever? That first rally around effect, I think, certainly boosted Trump in the polls within the Republican Party with respect to Ron DeSantis. Will people eventually tire of it? Will his legal troubles add up that it makes difficulty for him? I don't know. But I don't think there's any likelihood that anybody who wants to be president on the Republican side is going to look first and say, oh, there are these problems with Donald Trump. I think the first thing they're going to say is, look, this is another round of using government legal tools and other tools to really go after somebody in our party. And even if we don't love him, we're still likely to be more on his side than we are on the other.
Jim Kessler, I guess the only person or one of the people in the Republican field that will be talking about Chris Christie, the former New Jersey governor, would be in that mainstream category and will probably and has spoken very strongly against former President Trump. But what do you think about what John just said? Is it true that notwithstanding so-called mainstream Republicans, those who are remaining silent, that really the majority are going to just rally behind former President Trump, even as he is indicted?
That's up to leaders of the Republican Party who dislike Trump or despise Trump and have a lot of influence. And, you know, if you go back to the January 6th riots, okay, you saw for a moment nearly the entire Republican Party coalesce behind the notion that this was absolutely wrong, inappropriate, a crime. You had even people like Tucker Carlson saying about Donald Trump, I hate him. And you had Kevin McCarthy saying something very similar. And then within days, they all kind of moved back towards him. Okay. And that's because they got scared in some ways by Trump's voice and by some constituent pressure. I agree with John that there's a very high likelihood that there will be a coalescing behind Donald Trump on this. But it'll happen because people like Mitch McConnell, the minority leader in the Senate, and his deputy, John Thune, and others who really believe that Donald Trump needs to go, that he is a danger to the country and a danger to the party, they'll basically retreat and leave it to somebody else to make the most caustic charges. And it will be, you know, Chris Christie will be one of those. They'll say, let Chris Christie do it. But this is a moment, I believe, that the mainstream Republican leaders have a chance to lead on this. They have not done it thus far. They've been very timid. They'll probably continue to be timid.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the significance and implications of the 7-count indictment by the U.S. Department of Justice of former President Donald Trump, among other top political stories. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show from the webpage, voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, back to our show and back to you, John Fortier, to talk about some of the diehard members, the more hardline members of the Republican Party who happen to be in the House of Representatives. And one of the top stories I thought we were going to discuss today was the fact that both Speaker McCarthy and President Biden, et cetera, overcame this debt ceiling crisis. They averted the debt ceiling crisis. They came to a compromise. But some hardline members in the House of Representatives are none too happy. So what is going on with these members and what kind of problems, trouble are they giving Speaker McCarthy? He can't hold votes. What's going on?
Well, every day in Washington, something new happens. And if we had taped this show 3 or 4 days ago, I think we would have been talking a little differently. And I do think it is worth noting that the debt ceiling crisis, which was averted, was a big story. And I guess briefly, I think it was a victory, especially for Kevin McCarthy, who exceeded expectations in holding together his caucus, also exceeded expectations getting, I think, a deal that was probably more favorable to Republicans than people thought. And doing all of this with this narrow majority that people said for a long time was very hard to manage. And how is he going to do this? So I think that is all true. Then, of course, not many days later, on a very inconsequential vote, but as a signal, as a shot across the bow, a number of members, 10 or 11 or so Republicans, bucked the leadership on a vote that you would typically never vote, something they actually wanted to pass, a minor bill, and showed the speaker that they weren't happy with the deal. The deal was voted for by many Republicans and Democrats, but the right of the Republican Party and some of the left of the Democratic Party did not vote for the deal. And some of that right, not the whole of the right, but it's certainly enough members, they only need a few to cause trouble, have sent a signal across the bow of Kevin McCarthy. Now, what's the upshot of this? What will happen? And it is hard to know at this point. We don't have a momentous occasion like the debt ceiling coming up, so that the trouble that they can cause is probably minor. I mean, obviously, we're going to go into budget season that has some ways in which these members could be difficult. They could send other test signals. If they really are digging in and saying, we don't want Kevin McCarthy as speaker, then ultimately, like other speakers, that could be the end of him. But I do think Kevin McCarthy has been a survivor, and there probably is going to be some negotiation, and we will see. But the big win was tempered by a signal from some small number, but a significant enough number of populist Republicans who wanted to send the signal to Kevin McCarthy that he can't act without them.
Well, Jim Kessler, you always predicted that we would overcome this debt ceiling crisis. Perhaps the mechanics turned out a bit different than you had originally thought, but nonetheless, it did happen. Now, what is Speaker McCarthy facing with this rebellion by hard right Republicans?
I think he's got some problems. So the fear among hardcore conservatives in the House was that Kevin McCarthy is not nearly as conservative as he claims to be. And the debt ceiling denouement was a proof point in their favor. It was a very modest, mainstream, kind of normal deal that came out. If you look at the years 1995 to 2022, Democrats in the House had two leaders, Dick Gephardt and Nancy Pelosi. Republicans had six. And oftentimes it was when in leadership, the number two or number three person took on the number one person. And one of the big problems that Kevin McCarthy has is that his number two, Stephen Scalise, seems to be siding with the rebels. And this looks like, in some ways, the typical House Republican palace coup that we've seen many times the past 25 years. I expect that Kevin McCarthy will survive this Congress. I don't think he'll survive as leader beyond that.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it to Jim Kessler to provide some historical context there, but we will revisit this issue in a future program. But now let's turn to this expanding Republican field of presidential candidates, John Fortier. As you alluded to, and as you have always said, Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, is right behind former President Trump, who leads the pack. But we saw former Vice President Mike Pence file paperwork to launch his 2024 presidential bid. We saw, as we said before, New Jersey, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie on the completely other end of the spectrum. So what do we make of this now, particularly in light of the indictment of former President Trump?
Well, I think the Republican field can be described as, you know, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and a growing number of others. And if we talked 2 months ago, we did talk 2 months ago, we would have thought Ron DeSantis was probably in a better place than he is today. I still, you know, think there's some question in the long term. We might come back to where he was. But I think the big question is, can Ron DeSantis really stand up as a very strong second alternative to Donald Trump? And then the others that join the field will drop out, won't seem important. People won't give them their money. They won't give them their support. And there, you know, I think there is a path for someone like DeSantis who can both appeal to the Trump voter, but will also get some of the non-Trump voters as well to win against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a strong figure, but if anybody could beat him, it would be Ron DeSantis. His fortunes are not as good as they were a couple of months ago, in part because the indictments we were talking about, there was some rallying around the president. In part, the president has come out. Some people would point to some missteps of DeSantis. You know, I still think we're going to see this summer the first round of how much money the candidates have raised, and you're going to see Ron DeSantis with an enormous war chest. The president will do well, too. But the other candidates may seem secondary. And so I think that's the big ball game. If it ends up that Ron DeSantis fades a bit and it's a really big field, that's really good for Donald Trump. It's hard for me to see anybody else rising up in the same way DeSantis would. But if DeSantis can keep and maybe expand on, get back to where he was as a second alternative to Trump, you know, then I think we could have a race going into the votes that we're going to see at the beginning of next year. And that's where things are uncertain.
Jim Kessler, I'd like you to weigh in on this expanding field, particularly any comments you have on former Vice President Pence getting into the race. Some are saying, well, it's like Trump, but without the baggage. But many don't think, you know, he really has a prayer in heaven, so to speak. Then there's Chris Christie, who's, you know, what's his purpose for getting in? Just to, you know, shake things up and speak so-called truth to power. How do you see this field?
Well, the Christie announcement was a scathing attack on Donald Trump, harsher than I've seen any Republican make on Trump, and as harsh as anything I've seen Democrats make on Donald Trump from a conservative viewpoint. So his candidacy will be very interesting, and I think it will garner a lot of media coverage there, which matters. I don't think Chris Christie can win this race. Okay. I mean, it seems, and then he'll deny this, his role is to drag Donald Trump down. And generally, when you're in a multi-candidate field and you go negative on another candidate, you bring that candidate back to earth, but you also damage your own candidacy. And it, usually another candidate benefits, and it could be Ron DeSantis. The key in this primary is, you know, how you win the delegates. It's the Republican primary is replete with a series of rules. So in the Republican primary, if you are winning a state, even by a small margin in a multi-candidate field, and you don't come close to winning a majority of the voters, you may win every single delegate that that state has to offer. And so In 2016, Donald Trump won about 45% of the GOP vote in the primaries, but over 60% of the delegates there. And there were four candidates actively running, Trump, Rubio, Cruz, and Kasich, through 30 races. The key, if you're a Republican who says we've got to nominate someone other than Donald Trump, is that after New Hampshire, which is the second state, the field whittles down to two. And will that be possible? It certainly wasn't possible in past contested races. But this large field that is getting larger by the week needs to become a duet after the second primary.
Again, Jim Kessler, you do have a way with words. So back to you, John Fortier, equally eloquent. But so it needs to become a duet, says Jim Kessler, you know, at least by the state of New Hampshire, the first primary after the Iowa caucuses. But are we looking at 2016 in a sense all over again, as some analysts are saying? There's so many in the field. And as Kessler said, you know, Trump will, even with a lesser percentage of the vote, he'll get the number of delegates necessary to win the nomination. How do you see that dynamic?
Yeah, first, just not to relitigate 2016, but I think Donald Trump was a much stronger candidate than some people give him credit for. They say he won because there was a divided field. He won like a lot of candidates in big fields. He was the dominant candidate. He didn't get quite a majority, but he was that. And in some ways, he's stronger. Maybe some ways he's weaker now, but he has been president, has run three campaigns, has an organization. I do think that Ron DeSantis sits in a place that's very different from those other candidates. And I absolutely agree with Jim. Ron DeSantis himself, I think, agrees with Jim. Ron DeSantis is telling his supporters there are three people who can become president or become the nominees. Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee, and it's either me or Donald Trump to be the nominee, and only I can beat Biden. And, you know, I agree with part of that logic. I don't think it's quite as different between the two candidates as some would think, but I do think that is the dynamic. The idea that if Ron DeSantis fades and then there is a big field and someone else has to rise up and become an alternative, be part of that duet with Donald Trump, I just don't see that. There are some people in the Republican Party running who have had good careers, who could run it, maybe have run in a different era. I will say Tim Scott is probably the one who is the most serious of the people in, but I still find it hard to see him really being able to play that role where he competes for the Trump voters. I mean, Ron DeSantis has competed for the Trump voters and, you know, has some strengths being a governor of the third largest state and being successful electorally. That looks good for him in the polls now, but not as good as it did a few months ago. And he needs to get to that place where he's part of that duet. He has a shot, and we'll just see how it shakes out over the next 6-7 months.
Will you get the last word, Jim Kessler? Do you think that Ron DeSantis has a shot at being the competitor for President Biden, the Republican nominee? And what about the Democrats? What are they saying now that former President Trump has been indicted? And who would they like President Biden to go up against? Who do they think he has a better chance of winning against?
Democrats believe that if it's a one-on-one race, Joe Biden versus Donald Trump, Joe Biden will win. That's not to say they want Donald Trump to be the nominee, because that scares the bejesus out of a lot of Democrats as well. There is a fear among Democrats, and I'm one of those people that have been raising the alarm, that a third party presidential run would act as a spoiler and peel away anti-Trump votes from Joe Biden and hand the presidency to Donald Trump. On the Republican nomination, Ron DeSantis has a real shot. I mean, being in second place and raising the money, you know, he's got a real shot of being the alternative to Donald Trump and winning this race. In some ways, though, Ron DeSantis is a throwback to the old Republican Party, in which it was the party that generally chose the next person in line that was a conventional choice. Ronald Reagan, after Gerald Ford, George H.W. Bush, then Bob Dole, and then on and on and on. Everybody sort of got their shot. Who was next? I'm not sure that Republican Party still exists, but we'll see if Ron DeSantis is able to be that person. I do believe that if somebody fresh showed up and had a shocking result in an Iowa or in New Hampshire, and that was a fresh face, like a Tim Scott, that would be a very interesting candidate against both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Not sure it can happen.
For now, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank both my terrific guests, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.